our version of
Blog Talk Radio.
Yes, it's that time again. It is 8 p.m. on a Wednesday, so guess where you are if you're listening. This is the K Thompson Live Show on the Blog Talk Radio Network. I am one of the co-hosts. I am also known as the son. My name is Eric Payne, and you are?
I'm known as the mother of the son, and I'm K Thompson. Welcome, everybody. K Thompson Live. We do have lots of things to discuss this morning. Tonight, brother, to give you information. You know, we're on every single Wednesday from 8 until 9 o'clock with a whole lot of interesting things that you may or may not be interested in, and I'm quite sure you will be interested in. You know, I've been looking at the debates going on, you know, with the people running for the president, and they are really wild. As a matter of fact, you know, that Biden has decided not to run for the presidency.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's a very interesting thing, and that's going to, you know, really give Hillary Clinton carte blanche. You know, she is open, and, you know, she is really running hard, and it looks like she has no fear. Although what's been happening, too, is the fact that Trump, of course, his numbers are way up, and then Carson is still right under him, and Hillary is somewhere along there. I forget exactly where she is, but the point is she's strong. So we will see what's going to be happening from now until. But it is unfortunate that Biden is not running because I think that he would make a pretty good president. But there is a question about, I don't understand why, and when Wayne Gilden calls in, we'll be talking to him about this also. Oh, okay. All right. Hello, Wayne. How are you?
Hi, good evening, Kay. Good evening, Eric. How you doing?
We're all doing fine. We're getting ready to talk about, you know, the debates, as a matter of fact. You know, but answering the two of you, I don't understand how Trump has excited hordes of people. If you two can tell me why this is happening and how this is happening, because he didn't say anything, he alludes to different things, tell me what's going on, because I really don't understand this.
Well, I think the nation's getting dumber.
Agreed.
Yeah, that's the only thing I can think of. You know, I'm glad the Democrats finally had a debate. So at least it looks like Hillary, with all due respect to Biden, you know, I don't think Biden's heart was ever really in it. But
yeah.
You know, it would have been. It really would have been an interesting contest because, you know, I still think she handled herself very well in the debate, that even the cast of characters there, who are there now, pale in comparison, including Bernie Sanders, you know. But, you know, at the end of the day, I think Biden made the right decision. Trump, I just don't understand. That whole party to me seems to be in shambles. But, you know, he may be the standard bearer. Eric?
Yeah, I was going to say they came up with a number that today I was watching Chris Matthews, whose show I'm not as thrilled as I used to be about. But I saw on his show that he was talking about Trump has been in the lead for 100 days now in all the polls. He's been the highest person polling for 100 days, and it looks like he will in fact be the nominee for the Republican Party. I don't think the Republican Party is a party anymore either, to be quite honest. I'm wondering if they're just a group of individuals who are just angry and loosely calling themselves Republicans. Maybe they should split up into two separate parties. I don't know, but it's clear to me that they're not really a party anymore. It's clear, like we talked about last week, there are certain individuals in that party that it seems that their goal is just to obstruct the government, keep the government from running and from operating. Mm-hmm. And those are largely the Tea Party caucus, who call themselves now the Freedom Caucus. And ironically, they're not making it too free for the government to run. So there you go. And also, too, you got Paul Ryan doesn't really want to take that job as Speaker of the House, because he saw how they treated John Boehner, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And he sees that these people are unwilling to compromise and you can get nothing done. And it's really interesting watching them kind of be in this circular firing squad and just try to shoot each other off. And as they come out, like today, if anybody saw the press conference with Boehner and McCarthy and these other leaders about what was going to be the agenda that the Republicans are putting out, they're still blaming the president. You know, they're sending this defense spending bill to the president and hopes that he doesn't veto it. And McCarthy, who I don't think English is his first language, was talking about, you know, this is good for the American people and all that. I'm being facetious when I talk about Kevin McCarthy not having English as his first language. But, you know, and a lot of them they're firing, of course, is the weather, blaming the president. And it's just really kind of funny to me that their party is in shambles. You got individuals who are the racist and prejudice element of their party going against everything that the moderates or the more reasonable members of the party might be willing to compromise on. And that's what, you know, once they say, once you win the election, then it's time to govern. And usually there's a period where people try to come together in good faith. And we know that that period was never observed once Barack Obama got in office. So it's really kind of interesting to watch their machinations and what they're doing. I thought, going back to the vice president today announcing that he would not run, I think that's a good thing, because the Democrats can focus all their energy. Certainly after the debate, as you said, Wayne, Hillary Clinton is really, you know, she's starting to really warm up and she's going to be in good fighting shape, so to speak, when it comes time to go heads up with their Republican nominee. Another thing I want to say is interesting that if you listen to the media, how they try to make, you know, what the media does, certain members of the media try to especially nowadays, try to kind of instigate. You know, they instigate a little bit, because they said that the vice president took a swipe at Hillary Clinton, and Hillary said something that where in the last debate, you know, when asked who you think that are your enemies, and she jokingly said the Republicans. And it's interesting to me to see all these reporters try to really make something out of that statement, where she was kind of joking and she was commenting on the climate, which was obvious that they were after her. But it's interesting that you have all of these pundits trying to make something out of that statement, and then when Joe Biden says something, to try to stir up the water. It's really interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting. And you know, I think as soon as they say something, you know, they'll, you know, jump on it right away.
Right.
And you know, but Joe Biden did say some things about what he hoped would the country would work on. You know, and he was not throwing his hat in the race, because, you know, he wasn't ready for that. But he was also talking about several things, and he was talking about some real issues. You'd never heard Trump say any of these issues. He was talking about the importance of public education. He was also talking about the commitment to college education. He was also talking about raising the economic status for women in work and limiting taxes so that wealthy people must pay a little more money. Now, doesn't that sound like a possible presidential list of things that you can work on? Because some of the candidates aren't really even working on this. And he was also saying that you can't solve the world's problems alone. You've got to have, you know, the rest of the world or people involved with it. And he said that you don't look at the Republicans. Oh, this is very interesting. Biden said, don't look at Republicans like our enemies. Okay? He said the emphasis should be on research and development. It should be a commitment to end cancer. And we should require that Democrats and Republicans work together. Mm-hmm. Now, isn't that presidential? And these other fools, you know, are involved with a whole heck of a lot of other things that
right.
don't make sense.
Well, here's the thing, Wayne, I don't know if you want to get in here real quick, but I just want to say, you know, that's what the media was trying to make a big deal out of him saying, you know, they're not our enemies, they're our colleagues, we should work with them. And that's great and fine, and Barack Obama said that too. But we know the Republicans aren't trying to work with anybody. So let's not waste the time. There's no need for us to waste any more time, like we did with Barack's 8 years, that they're not willing to work with people. So let's give him a brief opportunity. If not, keep it moving. All right, I understand what he's saying, trying to bring things together, right on, right on. That's great, that's wonderful. But we have objectives that we want to achieve. Roads are falling apart. People, not everybody is making the same amount of money.
Mm-hmm.
And these are obstruction. This is being, I think, further, this problem is being further worsened because these Republicans are obstructionists and they don't want to govern. If you're not, and particularly this one faction of their party, if you don't agree with 100% of what they have, they make you their enemy. And really the word should go out to the Republicans because they've been the ones who have been demonizing everybody that does not agree with them. They've been the ones that saying the most despicable things about a sitting president of the United States. So I understand what the vice president is saying. And, you know, when you're down there, when you're working with people, you know, you work with people on a one-on-one basis. So you probably have a different opinion than people, those of us who sit back here at home and watch on TV what these individuals say. And so I myself have a hard time even looking at some of these people without contempt in my eye when I'm down on Capitol Hill because I know what they really stand for. And obviously when you work one-on-one with people, it's like kind of like racism and prejudice. When you get to know individuals on a one-to-one basis, some of those feelings go away. But that doesn't mean that they don't buy into the whole group of PR, which is we hate all of them, but just a few that's cool with me that I know personally. So what do you think about that, Wayne? You've got a quiet there.
I happen to agree. I think you gave an accurate analysis of what's going on with the Republican Party, and I think that any American who is scrutinizing and who follows politics, and I really would like to encourage all Americans to really put follow the contest as it's going, being played out and unraveling between both parties, because the bottom line is this is our future. The one redeemable thing I have to say about Donald Trump, and it's the only thing that I happen to agree with him, is the fact that he calls out Jeb Bush and George W. all the time about what happened in 2001. Because the deal is, I'm not saying that George W. dropped the bombs or his father had given him some insight as to what to expect, but all the confusion that we're going through right now with the economy, with banks not lending, the fact that it took a long time just to recover to this point, and the fact that, you know, the country was so disgusted in 2007 and 2008 that they were grateful to hear Barack Obama provide some measure of hope, not knowing what would happen in the next 8 years. But the bottom line is that getting back is that you can see all the infightings going on with the Tea Party. You see this whole contest for the position of Speaker of the House, which is a formidable position. God forbid anything should happen to the President and Vice President. You know, that should not be taken lightly. And then the thing is, it's just that, you know, we're living in a very, very troubled time. You know, we've seen an uptick. I don't know, maybe it's not happening in Jersey, but every morning, every day I wake up, I hear some shooting in New York. And we just lost a police officer today. Not today, last night or early this morning, I should say. It actually happened overnight and in the village of Harlem. And, you know, something's got to be done about these guns. And it's not just an urban problem. It is a national problem, you know. And all these things, and I agree with you, Kay. I mean, I had forgotten Biden had mentioned the business of trying to make education affordable for all Americans, you know. And I don't know, I can't speak for everyone else, but I'm in that catch-22 situation, you know, with respect to not being entitled for certain health care benefits. And I'm paying through the nose for what was supposed to be affordable health care. And I think Obama's vision was accurate, But unfortunately, he never got the support from the other side to see this thing actually fulfill and unfold in a very progressive way that everyone would be okay and would not have to be paying through the nose, you know, having to make decisions between having health care or putting food on the table, you know, that sort of thing. Having health care or heating their homes at night in the middle of the winter, you know. I mean, it's just as basic as that. And, you know, I could just go on and on about the issues, but I really think, Eric, you painted a picture that is just awesome in terms of what the Republican Party is going through and what people need to pay attention in each aspect, each camp, because they're fragmented. They're not united.
What the public is doing is they're watching a television show because of Trump, okay? You know, he is a performer. The people who are looking at Trump are, you know, those people. Remember during a speech that President Obama gave, and a person in the audience, and probably an elected official, I don't remember, but yelled out, "You lie," to the President of the United States? That's the group that we're talking about. That's the people who,
right,
you know, see this Trump, you know, and somebody to really take seriously. And I don't understand it. I'll tell you another thing that I feel very strongly about. What the heck is wrong with this country with allowing them and, you know, people to have guns and encouraging them to have guns? All right? The more guns, the more killings, the more shootings. Okay? So what is going on? Now, everybody can have a gun. Okay, fine. They have guns. Now, what happens? The killing of people get gone up. Police persons, everybody. This doesn't make sense.
Yeah. It's tragic, and the thing is that I don't know what it's going to take. We need a national policy that everyone adheres to, and you know, I know some people espouse that everyone should be strapped. Sometimes I wonder, you know, I walk out my door, I don't know if I'm coming back in, you know, but at the same time, you know, there's so much lawlessness, and then you have the flip side where you have cops, you know. Some of them, it's part of their culture to shoot first and ask questions after. You know, it's, what do you do?
I know one thing, they don't get it. With the amounts of people who are non-white, you know, in this country, increasing every day, and also the other different immigrants, the other people coming into the country, and a lot of them have, you know, been able to have guns. And when they get their citizenship, well, that's all well and good. But the point is, you know, I don't understand why there isn't a gun, anti-gun lobby because of so many killings for using guns. Isn't that a military thing used for the military to shoot people in other countries, you know, if you're at war? But this way, you know, you're giving people, you know, automatic rifles or automatic weapons and just saying, here, you know, use them. You know, you don't even have to pay much for them. They're out there on the street. Doesn't make sense.
I was just going to say, I see that in Venezuela. I see it in Trinidad, Jamaica, places like that. I don't want to see that crap happening here. You know, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. You know, I think we are at a point now. Somebody, I know every time there's a mass shooting, the president makes it a point to leave the Washington to go to the site. He's not always warmly received. It seems that only the family of the victims get it after they've suffered something. And then the NRA, you know, they're just giving their standard line that, you know, there are a lot of sick people out here. Well, if there are a lot of sick people out here, why don't we do something to help them, have them quarantined so they can get the help that they need, you know?
Yeah. I think there are a number of variables when you talk about the president going to visit, because first they hate him in a lot of these areas. So that happen to be rural areas where someone is just flipping out with a gun. I know that we had the cop shot the other day, and that was in the course of a crime. So urban areas, usually the gun violence is related to crime. It seems that in the rural areas, gun violence is related to someone who's not all the way there being able to get a hold of a firearm and going in, deciding they want to shoot everybody. And so it's two ends of the spectrum, but there's a lot, like I said, there's a lot of variables going on because you get the president. I'm sure the president were to come to New York where that cop was shot last night, he probably would be received a little bit different, although we have a lot of, you know, Fox News watchers and Republicans that are on the police force and fire department and things like that. But I think that he would be, at least you probably wouldn't see any Confederate flags. I'm pretty sure about that, you know.
Right.
And that's part of the issue. They make up this lie that he wants to take everybody's guns, B, or A, really, he's a black president, and they never wanted a black president, B, they lied and said that this black president is going to take their guns, C, he's making them get rid of the Confederate flag, and D, he's just coming here, and we don't like the way his blackness looks. So, you know, you got a lot of those variables all wrapped up in one, I believe, and it's hard to parse which particular side of the argument they're on, and they're just part of the hateful wing of the Republican Party, you know? They call them...
Right, like right.
They were the Tea Party at one time, and now they're calling themselves the Freedom Party, freedom to hate. So,
yeah, exactly.
It's really bizarre, and then you have the... America being a capitalist society, in my opinion, then you have the gun lobby. They're trying to sell products. They want everybody to have guns. So therefore, they make up these statistics. You know, there were some fake statistics that were floating around, trying to call it the Ferguson effect, where there were more cops getting shot this year and this and that. And then they debunked that. The facts are actually police deaths, shootings are actually down. And so what happens is that these lies constantly get made up. So we can't get anywhere. And getting back to Republicans, they used to stand for, you know, a little bit more of a conservative approach to government, you know, and usually their conservative stances on things like the budget and things like that. Those were, you know, when you had reasonable Republicans that really raised some of these issues, those were things to be considered. And if you got the right Republican or the one that was reasonable, at least making these arguments, you almost kind of go with them. You know, you see them making arguments like Donald Trump. You know, Donald Trump, he makes good arguments in terms of, you know, certain things that he agreed with that the Democrats did, certain things that he obviously is for the rich. But I was surprised to hear him say, you know, certain wealthy members are going to have to pay more in taxes. I was surprised to hear him, you know, put it out there. George Bush, it was on his watch that we got attacked on 9/11. And that's the truth. It was on his watch. And
right.
He was down in Texas. He didn't read the report that said Osama bin Laden determined to attack America. Or as Condi Rice put it when she was being questioned, I think the report said something like, oh, Osama bin Laden determined to attack America. And if you ever watched the actual footage of her saying that, she made it sound so benign and flowery and like, oh, it might have said something like that. It might have said something. I mean, just the way she kind of presented it was like it wasn't as ominous and dangerous as it was. It was really kind of
remarkable. Yeah.
And Donald Trump,
well, she,
you know, says it like it is. It was like it was on George's, it was on your brother's watch, Jeff. Truth be told,
right.
It was on your brother's watch. So that's what time it is. And Jeb trying to rally the Republican base, you know, that old school, that old base or standard party bearer that we're just going to act like George Bush wasn't the worst president in American history. I think that they don't have that many friends anymore that are in power to help them achieve that narrative. And that's why Jeb losing his mind, because it's not supposed to be this hard for him. He wasn't expecting it.
Well, I mean, and you're absolutely right. Another great analysis, because the thing is at the end of the day, there are enough people out here who lived through 9/11, saw what went down, and there's been enough information spewed where Rice had some privileged information about what was about to happen. I remember distinctly there was a report once where she told some elected official in San Francisco before any of the planes dropped, before any of the attacks occurred, not to board a flight. You know, there were some people privy to certain information. And mm-hmm. The deal is, yeah, Jeb Bush talks all this smack about, well, he kept Americans safe. Well, listen, what about the 5,000 to 6,000 lives who were lost, going to the Middle East, trying to keep America safe over some petty nonsense about Saddam Hussein angering, disrespecting his daddy, you know? I mean, that kind of foolishness we don't need anymore.
Yeah, no, those guys are dealing with the presidency like it was just their own personal family business. I guess that's what I think. And everybody forgets. Let's put it in context, really, and I'll put it from my opinion. George was down in Texas because he didn't feel he actually had won the presidency. So you remember when he got elected.
Exactly.
He wasn't in shock. He was hiding because they stole the presidential election. They stole an election. He knew that. I'll say one thing about him. I think that that guy has a conscience that in spite of himself, in spite of him wanting to go along with the lies and stuff, his conscience gets to him. This is W. Bush. And you could see it on his face. You could see certain things on his face that he had to be the president, that stuff had to go down with. Whatever was the real plan and the real issue, some people have, if you look at Michael Moore's documentary, some people have some serious kind of conspiracy issues about it. And it's ironic, I think Donald Trump plays into a little bit of that too. You know, what was he doing? And the reason why he was down in Texas after he stole the election, after he stole the election was because he didn't feel he earned it. And I think that some people told him, you know, you got to go to Washington one of these days. And he got that report during that time that he was holed up in Texas, not really doing anything. If you remember, they got footage of him saying, we're out here clearing this brush out. They were somewhere on his farm, and he was doing some work on the farm. It's like, hello, you're president. Can you go to Washington and go to work? But in my opinion, he felt he didn't win the election, so he was down there in Texas. Then gets confronted with this report that he doesn't read, starts going into Washington, and boom, we get attacked, or something happens. And to me, the look on his face wasn't that somebody attacked us. It was like they did it on my watch. I told them not to do that, didn't want this to happen, you know. And there's some of us who believe 9/11 was an inside job or something fishy. I don't know. I would like to believe that some people are not that devious, but if you look at the history of this country, there's been members in the government and people who've done a lot more devious things than that to achieve their own personal goals. And we know that Dick Cheney certainly is an individual like that who will do whatever it takes
to achieve
personal goals. And so, here comes Donald Trump, rich guy. He got money too. He's not playing by the rules. He's going to say whatever works, and he's going to call him out on it. And now Jeb probably got home to Texas and said, I knew I should have ran first before you got to be president.
I can't possibly even imagine Trump as president. That would be a disaster. Honestly, because I haven't heard him expound on something that he really believes in, and he wants to follow it through. In other words, what are you going to be doing about education? What are you going to be doing about racism? What are you going to be doing about racism in the police department? I haven't heard him really deal with issues. All he says is, and I'm not going to listen. I know that person. I got money. Believe me. You know, that kind of thing. And people are buying into this nonsense. To me, he's a performer. You know, if you can listen to some of the stuff that he said, it might make a difference. But, you know, it's like a show right now. You can't really take him seriously, and that sometimes impacts on the way, you know, the rest of the people on the debate, you know, are delivering, you know, whatever they have to say. So it's really very difficult. This is a strange time for people to be running for the president. I don't know. I don't know if they have the chutzpah or the intelligence or the know-how, you know, to really serve as president of the country.
I don't think you're ever going to hear Trump say anything articulate or to articulate on the issues that you just cited, Kay. I don't think that's part of his DNA. As you said, he's pretty much of a showman, but I also feel that he has the attention of the largest group of Republicans, so his numbers are that way. And I noticed that he is very careful about what he says to Ben Carson. So if anything is to happen, perhaps the two of them may be representing the party at some point. And, you know, I would like to think that might be better for Hillary Clinton. But at the end of the day, you know, I would hate to think that Trump's numbers are at a point where, you know, it would sway opinion either way, because he, when depending upon where he goes, he basically voices his opinion to get a certain response from that respective segment of the Republican community.
But
and that's
what opinion? What opinion does he have? You know, he's a performer. You know,
he has an opinion about immigration. He has an opinion about the Central Park Five. He has an opinion about the gun lobby.
And look, remember we were on the air during the Central Park Five. What did he do? He took out the full page ad in the Times.
Exactly. That was his opinion.
Okay, yeah, that came from him. So they said, I remember that completely. And lo and behold, we found out that those boys had nothing to do with it. Anna Phillips.
Exactly.
And then even the police people, some of the police department, told Anna Phillips from NBC, I think she was working at NBC or ABC at the time. But
yeah,
she knew that the woman who did that crime with that woman was in jail because the cops talked to him, and they knew it. And yet they put these kids in jail.
Right. That doesn't really have anything to do. I don't think it has much to do with
but Trump was involved
with Donald.
In that.
Well, he wasn't involved. Well, let's set the record straight. Let's not.
He helped create
a climate. Yeah,
right.
He wasn't involved.
Yeah,
in anything that he helped it, like everybody else of his ilk at the time, and helped to create a negative environment. But he didn't have anything to do.
No, but he did.
Well, let's just be clear about.
Okay, but he did help create that environment. No doubt about it.
Before we spread the rumors, he contributed to an environment that was pretty racial. I think he does have an opinion about things like, you know, being rich and like you said, immigration weighing, you know, but he says whatever to get elected. He's a businessman. He'll say whatever it is to achieve his end. So if that means revenue, the fringe lunatic base, like you said, it's not his job to correct people when they say negative things or wrong things about the president. You know, this is a guy who's willing to do whatever it takes. And I don't even think that he expected to be in this position that he's in now. I think that he probably was going to do this, use it as some sort of branding tool and way to make money and then come out of it and make money. You know, it's like I said before, you know, America, our society and our culture is obsessed with celebrity. And
yeah.
So there's a guy who was on a reality show that was actually a hit for a long time. And, you know, he's got this kind of celebrity kind of vibe. So, you know, when you go to these places that they haven't seen that type of stuff, you know, and middle America and places like that, they haven't seen someone who's been on TV very often. They haven't seen someone who's a billionaire very often. So, you know, his brand is already sold by the time he gets there based on these people watching TV. And so when they get there, he plays it up. He plays to their likes and dislikes, plays to their racism, plays to their prejudice, plays up to their ignorance about the facts. And it's like you also said, Wayne, you know, the average constituent, the average citizen needs to educate themselves more about really what the issues are. Because that's how certain things are able to go on in this country when you have a large number of the populace that's uneducated about the issues. And if they really aren't paying attention to the issues and aren't educated or are uneducated to the issues or just get fed up with what they perceive as what the politicians are doing, then they're not serving the purpose and they kind of just go along with whatever somebody says. I mean, you know, people make up stuff all the time. There's individuals out there I've seen, particularly in their party, who are willing to lie, will lie right to your face, lie on national TV, like when they were questioning the woman that was head of Planned Parenthood. And Jason Chaffetz tried to tried to put up an inaccurate graph that was by a anti-abortion group and presented as if it was an objective study, and then began to say, like I said, he was getting ready to lie about where he got the resource from. If you really watch the tape, he was grandstanding big time, and he was getting ready to lie. You don't recognize that graph. You don't recognize that thing. I got it from, and as he was getting ready to say, I got it from your company, Planned Parenthood's records, someone in her camp said, no, that's from that group that is anti-abortion. So they kind of cut him
Look
off,
at
and
that.
Really, it was the timing of the conversation saved him from being in a bold-faced lie. And if you look at his response, his reaction after getting caught there, he's totally thrown off guard. I would recommend everybody watch the news footage of this, because if you look at this guy's body language and what he does, he's thrown off guard, he's nervous. Look at his hand is shaking, and he says, well, we'll have to get on that and see who's up that. Next question, and he turns, like I said before, Wayne, he turns to Elijah Cummings and says, it's your time. You got 6 minutes.
Right.
And he was so nervous, he just wanted somebody to stop to let him off the hook and start talking. And Cummings was like, well, I got 7 minutes. He was like, whatever, just take it.
You know?
they wanted the camera off him, but this man was getting ready to, he had been lying, and it was just by the timing of that, he was getting ready to get caught in a bold-faced lie. And because of the way
right.
the conversation was, a lot of people really didn't pick up on it. Like I said, when my mom was on vacation, Wayne, you know, I was surprised that a lot of the media really just let that slide.
Yeah.
Just let that slide. And never followed up any questions with him afterwards.
Like, you know what I'm saying? If you watch some of the women's shows, for instance, like Whoopi Goldberg, you know, they get into some really deep stuff, you know, at times, a lot of the time. And Raven, what's her name? Raven Simone is a little bit nutty and off of center somehow. But this is a bright kid. You know, and she answers questions. Sometimes they are embarrassed to answer. But let me just tell you a little bit more about Biden, why it's unfortunate that he will not run. You know, because he also talked about, you know, that we should be more concerned about research and development. Okay, and had a commitment to end cancer. And he would require the Democrats and the Republicans to work together. And they are all, we should also be concerned about the gay community, about institutional racism. Now, who have you heard other than Biden? Okay? And it's unfortunate that he won't run. And I understand exactly why, because that must be horrible, using his son, of course it is, you know. But the things that he says, he was saying more things in just the time that he spoke, he was in the air yesterday, than all of them were saying together. So it was a different issue. But why aren't the rest of them talking about these issues that really are, you know, important to the whole of America?
I think
He one thing promised to get on the stump for whoever the standard bearer is going to be for this particular contest on the Democratic side, and make sure that the issues are addressed. You know, and there must have been a reason why he thought of actually challenging people like Hillary Clinton and all the others involved in the contest. There must have been something behind the scenes that, you know, catapulted. I don't think it's some decision that he had discussed with his son who passed. I think that, you know, he had been thinking about this, and it is a natural progression for a vice president to want to succeed the president in an election. But I think a lot of people realize this was Hillary's turn, and she's taken enough whiplash from the Republican Party, and I think she's the only person who could probably stand her ground in terms of challenging half the people that they intend to put up there. And if it's Trump and Carson, it should be a no-brainer, you know? But we don't know, you know? Anything can happen. I still maintain I'm giving a lot of speculation to what's going on here with Paul Ryan succeeding Boehner. you know, because I've never seen anybody come out with a list of demands to the party. And I guess in a way he's had to do that because the party's so crazy where they're twisted, you know, where with the conservative element in there, that as conservative as he is, perhaps some of them may think he's not conservative enough, you know? And I'm sorry, if you're an elected official, it's like taking a vow of poverty in the Catholic Church. You know, the deal is that regardless of what goes on with your family, you are an elected official. You know, it is your responsibility to serve your constituency. So, you know, whether you got to spend hours upon hours, you know, like your predecessor did, to maintain the position of speaker, if, God forbid, it comes to the point where you inherit the presidency through some tragic, catastrophic accident, it is what it is. This is what you chose to do, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah, I agree with you, and I find that a little bit, you know, once time was kids, and I wouldn't begrudge mine. I would be the same way, but, you know, it is what it is. And that comes, that kind of time commitment comes with the job. And you want to be, I mean, I think he's trying to find ways not to be the speaker, trying to find ways. If he can't be it exactly the way he wants, then he'll say, he can say, I tried and it didn't work out because of the Tea Party or the Freedom Party. But, and I think that's what he's doing. You know, he didn't want, he really doesn't want to be speaker under these circumstances. And he'd rather, you know, buy the time, so to speak, and be able to run for office at a later date. And presiding over a house this fragmented and as crazy as his own party is would only damage probably him for the future. But that's the party he chose. And he's partly to blame for that, kind of nurturing that, making it fertile ground for that Tea Party to really develop and just to become a monster, you know? I mean, you see Michelle Bachmann is not around anymore. She was a Tea Party favorite, know, crazy as she was, you know? So they kind of, like I said, they're in a circular firing squad, man. They're kind of trying to shoot each other. And we should just sit back and let them reveal themselves for who they truly are, you know?
You know, and I have something to add to this, you know, the negative way that Trump speaks about women or one woman is indicative of what he feels about certain women. And if they don't look a certain way or if they don't bow to him, quote unquote, he has a problem with that. But I really have a good suggestion, as a matter of fact. You know, we're quibbling, they're quibbling over the vice presidency, Hillary. They're quibbling over Trump. I have somebody I want to suggest to run for president, and I think it's Oprah Winfrey. Okay? I think she would be actually, she would throw Trump's behind out the walls or out the window, okay? I really think Oprah Winfrey should run for the presidency of the United States.
Well, I'm certain she has a lot of support, and I know Trump mentioned her name as a possible vice presidential candidate.
Yeah, I'm thinking of the presidency. Why not? She's bright. She has a lot of money. She knows exactly what she's talking about. She believes in somebody, okay? And she's proved it, okay?
Well, you are aware of the news that he might have met with her at one time, right?
Yeah.
And allegedly, everybody was saying that he was going to discuss her being his vice presidential candidate, but who knows whether that was really true. But
there's actually going to be worse
when
you go for it.
Well, the only thing is that what I worry about is that we could criticize Trump because of his celebrity, and unfortunately we would probably hear the same criticism about Oprah if she were to step into the race. You know, we watched how Wall Street reacted to her taking over Weight Watchers or being a participant. I shouldn't say take over, but as being on the board of the Weight Watchers organization. You know, she wields a lot of clout in this country. You're absolutely right, Kay. But she's still a celebrity. And, you know, there are people who are seasoned politicians, people who understand the process, like your cousin and nephew Donald Payne Jr., who watched, you know, watched the process in the eyes of, you know, his dad all those years, and made a conscious decision. I know he wasn't sitting back like a Paul Ryan looking for all sorts of prerequisites when the time came. He knew he was ready for the task, and he knew what he had to do, and he knew what came with it. But the bottom line is that, I don't know, I mean, we already had the Ronald Reagans, we had Schwarzenegger. Of course, that's the whole West Coast thing. But I would be troubled if we only had celebrities seeking the highest office in the land and not knowing whether or not if they are skillful enough to interact or diffuse an international crisis if the time came.
Oprah is qualified in every sense of the word. Now, if you used to watch our show, I remember when she first started. Remember she was on Donahue's show, Phil Donahue?
Right.
You remember that name? Right, when she first started, he was a reporter out of, I don't know, it was Philadelphia or someplace. And he, I don't know, it was him giving her a shot or NBC giving her a shot or whatever station or channel that Phil Donahue he was on. But when they assigned her after Donahue was finished or was, you know, leaving, or he was asked to leave by NBC, I don't know, her numbers took off like a shot.
Yeah,
okay.
Well, they had been watching her.
Yes, and Oprah Winfrey decided to put her hat in the ring. You know, they would come. Tons of people would come to see Oprah that would make Donald Trump look like a Trump. Okay.
Yeah. Period. Exactly. Yeah.
And
no one knew what an Oprah was back then. You know.
Yeah.
But
really something, I'm telling you. Oprah won't run. We need you now. We need you if you make Donald Trump, but Donald Trump is... I have to laugh every time I think about it.
If Oprah runs to silence Trump, that'd be a good thing.
So we need to pass this message right on to Oprah Winfrey. I say Oprah Winfrey for the President of the United States. Everybody agree? Call. Call Oprah. Call herself. Tell them that Kay Thompson said so. Oops.
I guess they'll have you running soon, too.
I'm not interested in that, but Eric, maybe. You know, this is the pain wagon.
The Payne dynasty, you know, I mean, and I say this unabashedly, I think it's really a blessing. And as I see what goes on in politics, I was just, as I shared with you earlier, I'm doing a little research now, and it just amazes me what goes on, you know, in the political world and what people get away with and people who are basically worth their salt, you know.
Yeah.
Those are the ones, the unsung heroes, don't get enough praise for what it is that they do, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. But, you know, hopefully this world will change. Things will get better. I can't see us going back again to another Republican administration at this point. And if it is, I hope it's an Abe Lincoln Republican, you know?
let me shift the focus a little bit, Wayne, and ask you about your mayor there in New York City. You just came back from Israel, right? From what I'm understanding. And a lot of people, I mean, it seems that there's a lot of people that don't like the job, that aren't too happy with the job that he's doing. And seems that I heard something about that he's doing more focusing on raising his national profile than taking care of the city. And I'd like to get your opinion about that. First, I'd like to say I appreciate him naming that building after David Dinkins.
The municipal building. Yeah,
That was really a great thing. And, you know, my tendency, my reflex is every time I hear them attacking him is to support him even more because I know that there's only one reason that these people could be attacking this guy, and from what I see, his pedigree and his resume, you know, interracial family, very pro civil rights type of guy. When I hear people attacking an individual like that, I can't help but wonder that they attack what he stands for.
Mm-hmm.
And but you live there, so I'd have to defer to someone that's a constituent of his.
I think you're dead on with that analysis also, Eric. It's unfortunate. And every sitting mayor, including Dinkins, you know, if you're going to run the city of New York, I was about to say rule, if you're going to run the city of New York, that Jewish lobby out there is strong. It's huge. And the deal is that everyone makes that trip, you know. He made it twice before becoming mayor. What's wrong with him having aspirations of seeking a national office? You know, you think Andrew Cuomo, who's now enjoying his second term as governor, is in a situation whereby he's not thinking about what goes on after he leaves the office? I don't see him staying as long as his daddy did, you know. There's no term limit to my knowledge up there, but the bottom line is that everyone should have aspirations of going further. The only thing that I'm concerned about, and I know he's talked about it, is what we discussed at the beginning of the show, the whole issue with guns in this town. And I'm not saying that they're not doing anything to quell the situation, but I'm beginning to think, I was watching a report, and I will acknowledge I saw it on Fox, where there was speculation that the numbers of shootings going on, as reported by the New York City Police Department, is being doctored to give the impression that crime is under control. But anyone watching the news, seeing breaking news coming out of the city, ever since they had a cessation of stop and frisk, it's my opinion, God forgive me for saying this, but I just see there's been a bounce. I think these young punks, I just heard this through somebody who had a connection with the Brooklyn DA's office. They know that they're not going to be stopped on the streets of the city the way they used to because they looked a certain way. And if I may take a page out of this whole business of self-help, we have only ourselves to blame as a culture. I mean, there's no reason why we should be acting the way we do. But again, God forgive me for saying this, because I understand Ferguson, I understood Staten Island, I understood what happened in Brownsville, Brooklyn, when a rookie cop went through a housing project, saw somebody he thought was threatening, and the guy was unarmed and shot him to death, you know. But I also saw the nonsense in Harlem last night, where a five-year veteran of the force was gunned down it's just aggravating. And I'm at a point, I don't want to feel like I can't walk out my house past a certain hour, but I hate to say it. I mean, I feel blessed and privileged that I do have an option. I don't have to be in the Bronx every night. And the bottom line is it just bothers me what goes on down here.
So you're I kind of disagree with you on a lot of points, Wayne. I don't think that's.
I know. I'm angry, Eric. I'm sorry.
I understand. I don't think the stop and frisk necessarily. I don't think that the city was. I don't think the stop and frisk made New York City safer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think that what happened is that the impression of stop and frisk, people were saying that was safer, but it was only if it was safer. Then people know, you know what a criminal looks like. I mean, you're saying that partially out of because you say these young punks, these thugs. We know what those individuals look like and usually what they're up to. Stop and frisk didn't do that. Stop and frisk was a broad kind of stroke to stop every black man. and every Hispanic man.
Yeah.
We have a friend, my friend who wrote the play Jonah that gave me my start in New York City theater was stopped and frisked. And this guy is like 5 years older than me. And he grayed prematurely. So I'm sure he's walking around with white hair. And he stutters. And he there's nothing about this guy that looks threatening or thuggish or any reason to stop and frisk him. Other than that, it's the decision of the individual officer at the time. And if you look at the numbers obviously will play out. If you have a majority of officers that are white,
right,
and they go by the image or the misconception of most of the perpetrators are black, then they're going to stop and frisk mostly black people. And I'm never going to think that that's okay to stop and frisk. They weren't, I don't think, you know, like a buddy of mine said, I went over to New York one day, what's up with stop and frisk? He said, man, they're doing that uptown. They're not stopping and frisking brothers downtown. And if they're doing it just uptown, then what does that tell you? Was there more crime uptown? Are they trying to help the residents there? Maybe. But how the history of this country goes, I'm kind of feeling like maybe they're not on the up and up. So they're not there to help the guy. I mean, you know, to me, it might be 50-50. It might be 50-50 that you might have to deal with a one of these crazy cops that doesn't like black people as opposed to dealing with a thug. So I don't know about that. But I do know that consistently, time and time again, black people have been shot. There's a black person that was shot in Florida the other day, last night by a police officer.
That's true.
Well, I remember when I was doing this, you know, I've got this show, we did police report.
Report, right.
With Ali Al-Rahman.
Mm-hmm.
And he chose, what, about five other cops, including, I forget his name, I'll say it. But anyway, he got about four or five cops to come in every week, you know, and talk about issues that were happening in the community, right? And you remember
right.
when he was talking about cops going into police's, into people's houses, people were calling in about this stuff. And they were dealing with it on air, and I heard so much stuff about what the cops were doing in Brooklyn alone, okay? And the majority of them who were doing this to a certain level group of people were doing it to black people, and it was them that were, those cops were racist, you know, they just couldn't stop. So therefore, a lot of police people were calling into the show that wouldn't ordinarily even talk to the police because they were afraid.
That's 2 minutes.
Exactly.
Okay? So you remember Police Report on WLIV with Ali Al-Rahman. Fortunately, Ali Al-Rahman and you know, the Guardian Police Department, they did a whole lot, you know, to help the community. I know. I was on, and I had a lot of stories about it.
I agree. I think it should be documented because, I mean, every time I do some research on what happened back then, we did more. We had better numbers, Kay, and I know Mal Wolfuck, if he were listening, he would agree, that we had better numbers than some of the all-news stations at that time because of what was going on, you know? But I agree with you, Eric. I'm just disappointed. It just bothers me. I just see an increase. I could be wrong, you know?
I mean, yeah, I understand. I mean, you know, I mean, we're usually the first ones to suffer from crime. That's without a doubt. We shouldn't have to expect it from the people who are supposed to be protecting this service. Anyway, we got about a minute left, so we're going to start wrapping up. We want to thank everybody for listening into the Kay Thompson Live show that you can hear every Wednesday from 8 to 9 p.m. live. We want you to listen in, call in, take part in our discussion. You can also hear the show, archives of the show, on Blog Talk Radio, / Kay Thompson Live, blogtalkradio.com/ Kay Thompson Live. You are Wayne. Give us your name real quick as we go.
Wayne Gilman.
All right. There's that legendary voice, everybody. And I am the son, also known as Eric Payne. Thank you for listening. And you are.
I'm Kay Thompson. Listen again, everybody. Wednesday, 8 to 9 o'clock.
All right.
All the best.
All right. Take care. We'll see you again next week, everybody. Don't forget. Keep the faith, baby.
that.